She was as sober as a nun that afternoon. I could see it in her eyes. She hadn't touched the drug in days, maybe even since her overdose. What about the opium itself? Did you examine her supply? I couldn't find it, Pritchard said. I turned over her whole drawer looking for it, but the lump was gone. Moody raised his eyebrows. The lump was gone? Yes, said Pritchard. Thank you, Mr. Pritchard, said Moody. That will be all. Harrington was bent over his ledger, writing furiously. Now he ripped out the page upon which he had been scribbling and thrust it down the bench for the other men to read. Broom, Moody saw, was no longer smirking. Call the next witness, said the justice, who was writing also. The next witness was Aubert Gascoigne, whose testimony confirmed that the misfire had occurred, the bullet had vanished, and that the second shot had been fired without incident into the headboard of Anna's bed. Questioned by Broom, he admitted that he had not suspected that Emery Staines might have been present in the Gridiron Hotel on the afternoon of the 27th of January. Questioned by Moody, he agreed that the notion was very possible. He returned to his place below the dais, and once he was seated again, the justice called the jailhouse chaplain, Cowell Devlin. Reverend Devlin, said Broom, once the clergyman had been sworn in. He held up the deed of gift. How did this document first come to be in your possession?
I found it in Crosby Wells' cottage, the morning after his death, Devlin said. Mr. Lauderback had brought news of Mr. Wells' death to Hokitika, and I had been charged by Governor Shepherd to go to the cottage and assist in the collection of the man's remains.
Where exactly did you find this document?
I found it in the ash drawer at the bottom of the stove, said Devlin. The place had an unhappy atmosphere, and the day was very wet. I decided to light a fire. I opened the drawer and saw that document lying in the grate.
What did you do next?
I confiscated it, said Devlin.
Why?
The document concerned a great deal of money, the chaplain said calmly, and I judged it prudent not to make the information public until Miss Wetherill's health had improved. She had been brought into the police camp late the previous night on a suspected charge of felo de se, and it was very plain that she was not in a fit state for surprises.
Was that the only reason for your confiscation?
No, Devlin said. As I later explained to Governor Shepherd, the document did not seem worth sharing with the police. It was, at that time, invalid.
Why was it invalid?
Mr. Staines had not signed his name to authorize the bequest, said Devlin.
And yet the document that I'm holding does bear Mr. Staines' signature, said Broom. Please explain to the court how this document came to be signed.
I am afraid I can't, Devlin said. I did not witness the signing firsthand.
Broom faltered. When did you first become aware that the deed had been signed?
On the morning of the 20th of March, when I took the deed to Miss Wetherill at the Wayfarer's Fortune. We had been discussing other matters, and it was during our conversation that I first noticed the document had acquired a signature.
Did you see Miss Wetherill sign this deed of gift?
No, I did not.
Broom was plainly flummoxed by this. To regain composure, he said, What were you discussing?
The nature of our discussion that morning was confidential to my status as a clergyman, Devlin said. I cannot be asked to repeat it, or to testify against her.
Broom was astonished. Devlin, however, was in the right, and after a great deal of protestation and argument, Broom surrendered his witness to Moody, looking very upset. Moody took a moment to arrange his papers before he began.
Reverend Devlin, he said, did you show this deed of gift to Governor Shepherd immediately after you discovered it?
No, I did not, said Devlin.
How then did Governor Shepherd become aware of its existence?
Quite by accident, replied Devlin. I was keeping the document in my Bible to keep it flat, and Governor Shepherd chanced upon it while browsing. This occurred perhaps a month after Mr. Wells' death.
Moody nodded.
Was Mr. Shepherd alone when this accidental discovery occurred?
Yes.
What did he do?
He advised me to share the deed with Miss Wetherill, and I did so.
Immediately?
No, I waited some weeks. I wanted to speak with her alone, without Mrs. Carver's knowledge, and there were few opportunities to do so, given that the two women were living together, and very rarely spent any length of time apart.
Why did you want your conversation with Miss Wetherill to happen without Mrs. Carver's knowledge?
At the time, I believed Mrs. Carver to be the rightful inheritor of the fortune discovered in Mr. Wells' cottage, Devlin said. I did not want to drive a wedge between her and Miss Wetherill, on account of a document that, for all I knew, might have been somebody's idea of a joke. On the morning of the 20th of March, as you may remember, Mrs. Carver was summoned to the courthouse. I read of the summons in the morning paper, and made for the wayfarer's fortune at once.
Moody nodded. Had the deed remained in your Bible in the meantime?
Yes, said Devlin.
Were there any subsequent occasions, following Governor Shepherd's initial discovery of the deed of gift, where Governor Shepherd was alone with your Bible?
A great many, said Devlin. I take it with me to the police camp every morning, and I often leave it in the jailhouse office while completing other tasks.
Moody paused a moment to let this implication settle. Then he said, changing the subject, How long have you known Miss Wetherill, Reverend?
I had not met her personally before the afternoon of the 20th of March, when I called on her at the Wayfarer's Fortune. Since that day, however, she has been in my custody at the police camp jailhouse, and I have seen her every day.
Have you had opportunity over this period to observe her and converse with her?
Ample opportunity.
Can you describe the general impression you formed of her character?
My impression is favourable, said Devlin. Of course she has been exploited.